on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We talk about baseball games that we watch together. I'm in Cleveland to watch Dodgers, Gardos. We dove in deep on that series. We opened up the mailbag to talk about bullpen phones and Team USA and rally caps. And then it got a little bit off the rails towards the end as I cried. All that and more on Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who believes that the midges should be in Cleveland every night. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and they don't bug me.
Yes, the Cleveland welcoming committee was out in full force this week as Jake Mintz, the great Jake Mintz, arrived in Cleveland, Ohio for the first time since the 2019 All-Star Game. And he was, like I said, welcomed by one of our greatest features here in Northeast Ohio, the midges, which will be probably we're just going to talk about midges for about an hour here as we sit here in the same room on this Wednesday morning recording an episode of Baseball Barbacast. It's great to see you, Jake. Thanks for visiting me. I know you didn't come just for the midges. You're here to see the Los Angeles Dodgers and your friend Jordan.
Yeah, and you. The midges, bronze medal.
They were pretty far down the list, but they have been a main character, unfortunately, over the first two games of this Dodgers-Guardians series, which we are going to talk about.
And if you don't know about the midges, you're like, what the heck are you guys talking about? Do a little research, educate yourself, do the work. There are a bunch of annoying bugs that like hatch on Lake Erie and then fly around here.
Yep.
And they interrupted Joba Chamberlain once. Go watch Foolish Baseball's video on that. We're not going to talk about that today. We are going to talk about the Cleveland Guardians hosting the Los Angeles Dodgers, because very rarely now do we get to watch baseball games together.
That's true.
It's bizarre because that is the basis of everything that we do. And the
that's how we got here.
That's how we got here, because we enjoyed watching baseball together. Now, we often will watch games at the same time and we're always texting and communicating and whatever. But this is the first time I've watched a baseball game with you since game five of the World Series. And the first time I watched a regular season game with you for like a long time.
Because, you know, we've been living in different cities for a few years now. And so we have very, very different domains. But this was a good opportunity on the schedule for Jake to come visit me where I am now and to see this Dodgers team, which you have seen a lot of. And I know, of course, we've talked about the Dodgers plenty on this show, and we will continue to. But this was also a good kind of point of reference for both of us because you have already seen them a ton this regular season on the road. You just saw them last weekend against the Mets. You've seen them in Miami. You've seen them a few spots along the way. Whereas I began my 2025 Major League Baseball season coverage at Dodgers spring training when everyone was healthy and vibes were good. And we were looking at all the famous players that they had signed, and Sasaki and, you know, Snell and Glasnow looks great. Remember, he finished the year hurt last year. He's back. He's good. And the team that I just watched, you know, these last couple nights is still really good. But it's a very different situation than the one that I maybe expected that I would see when I looked at the schedule and I said, oh, you know, Dodgers come into Cleveland at the end of May.
Yeah.
Surely they can't all be injured by then. Sure. And now here we are. Now, the Dodgers, again, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. There is still one more game of this series, which we will attend when we are done recording. But we just kind of what have we learned? Because you've seen, like I said, you've seen them a ton. Seen them play a bunch of regular season games. I have certainly been watching them on TV, but there are certainly some thoughts that we have that I think we're going to share because we have a baseball podcast, which is sweet.
This Dodgers team is like when you are going to make a recipe and you're like, you don't even look in the cupboard before you go to the supermarket. And you're like, oh, I have that. Like, oh, I have that. We have that. Yeah. We bought that last time. You go to the supermarket, you get your ingredients, you come back, you start cooking. And you realize like halfway through, like, I guess we don't have soy sauce. Like, oh, I guess we're out of shallots. Like, oh no, we don't
make it work.
And then you kind of just piece it together.
Yeah, and you then, still have some really good ingredients.
And you're going to eat
You them. Still have and salt. You're gonna eat. You're going to be fine. And that is, and we're going to get to the Guardians here too, because this is quite the contrast for many reasons. And, you know, the Dodgers have won rather comfortably in these first two games, but it is such a reminder of the two, not two, but there's just different groups of teams in this sport. Sure. And, you know, we saw it in the CS last year with them against the Yankees, but the Dodgers and Guardians, particularly this year, are an interesting reminder of kind of the haves and have nots in a lot of ways in the sport.
I want to hop into this with a very simple question. Are the Los Angeles Dodgers the best team in baseball? If I had asked you this on March 15th, you would have said absolutely. Yep. They have since suffered a landslide of injuries and gotten rid of Chris Taylor and Austin Barnes.
Yeah.
Is this the best team in baseball?
Well, by record, no longer. They still did have the best record of baseball for quite a while, even as all these guys were going down. The thing is that as a theme of this season, and again, how I kind of view all this every season, is that all the teams are bad. And so we haven't really had a team.
Wait till you hear about the Rockies.
Yeah, right. But we haven't had a team jump up and rip it from them. Now, I would say in the last week and a half or so, we've gotten a lot closer to that. And it's possible that it has happened. You could say that the Phillies have done that, the team that does have the best record, who had this great win streak, a team that had big expectations coming into the year, a team that has had some injuries, but generally their best players have pretty much shown up and have been pretty good, right?
Yep.
We've had teams like the Tigers who were up there with the best records in baseball, but that one's a little bit harder to see. And then the Yankees. So the Yankees are an interesting, the American League version of this, where it's like, wow, they have a lot of things going wrong. But when you're the Yankees, you still get to have some of the best players on earth, including the best hitter on earth. A lot of parallels there. We just saw these teams in the World Series. That's no breaking news. So this level of filibuster is to say, are the Dodgers still the best team in baseball?
At the beginning of the year, if I was like, who ends up with the best record?
Sure.
You would have picked the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Would you pick the Dodgers right now?
Oh, man. I think no, but I'm not. I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked, which is not a hot take. But at this point, I do think I would default down. I would round down on best record in baseball, which, again, you still could have said last year at a lot of points, even in the second half, and they still ended up doing it. We've watched them look pretty good. So, right, again, this is when you are the Dodgers, you can have a lot of things going really wrong. And especially this game on Tuesday was a good reminder of the things that even are going wrong, occasionally having the ability to go right that teams don't often have. And that's Max Muncy homering. He has been very bad. That's Michael Conforto homering. He has been
worse.
Very bad. And I was in on the Conforto signing, and he looked pretty good for the first 2-3 weeks. And it got so bad so quickly that at the start of the series, he's getting questions. You know, Dave Robb's getting questions like, how long can this go on? Now, it's a luxury problem to have when it's like Conforto's hitting seventh or eighth. He's not hitting third or fourth like he has on fast teams. But that's what you focus on when you are the standard of best team in baseball. You are the defending champs, and we expect you to be a super team.
Right.
But the things that are still going right are really going right.
Otani, good player.
Yeah, he's going to be all right.
Freddie Freeman, best year of his life.
I mean, it's hard. You know, numbers-wise, we are watching a very, very special version of Freddie Freeman. And I mean, again, he has an MVP, but that's a 60-game MVP. Yeah. Now, they've also played 60 games this year, and he would also maybe be MVP this year. So let's see him, you know, do it for another 100. I think he might. He does seem to be that locked in. And then Will Smith is the other one. Who is, you know, and I'm writing a little bit about this right now. It's disingenuous to be like Will Smith breakout season. I mean, he's been an all-star each of the last 2 years. Generally, Will Smith has been great because he has been great for a catcher. He has been an above average hitter every year of his career, which as a catcher is incredibly impressive. Now it's not just, oh, he's the best or one of the two or three best hitting catchers. Now he's one of the two or three best hitters in the National League. I believe the Dodgers right now have the three highest WRC pluses in the National League among qualified hitters, Freeman, Otani, and Will Smith. So a lot of that is on base driven. He had his fifth homer of the season this year. But yeah, those things are just, to have three of those at all, to have three of the best hitters in the sport, covers up for the fact that Mookie Betts isn't really hitting. You know, he's just like, okay, playing a better shortstop. And it's still just cool. Like, you have so many outs, not like outs, like getting out, although that also happens because it's baseball, but it's just, there's so many opportunities for them to still beat you. And that is exhausting.
Will Smith infuriates me, man.
Yeah.
It's like the guy named Will Smith is exactly what you think like a guy named Will Smith would be.
Hmm.
I need him to like get into a fight or like do something scrappy or like get a face tattoo.
Oh man. Like, I want that would Will be quite Smith, a pivot.
I want him to separate himself in my brain a little bit more, is all I'm saying. I guess maybe like being a top three hitter in the world is another way to do that.
Yeah, again, and he's a hell of a player. And now that they have moved on from Austin Barnes, they call up top prospect Dalton Rushing. And we talked about this when they made that move. Barnes, of course, stuck around for a long time, and there are reasons for that. But I think they're looking at transitioning Rushing into a role where they feel better about their overall lineup, not just this year, but of course, moving forward, if you can let Will Smith rest. Because what has happened to Will Smith each of the last few years is that he has had starts like this. His best season last year was April by far. And then as you gather the bumps and bruises, by the end of the season, Will Smith had like a 500 OPS in October. Didn't matter. Dodgers still won the World Series, but he was not at all an impactful hitter over the last few months of the season. We'll see. It's still a lot to ask from him to say that just because Dalton Rushing is there, he is going to be at a totally fresh come October this year is a little, maybe a little hopeful. But so far, it's looking like they're in pretty good shape there.
I'm fascinated by Clayton Kershaw, who is going to pitch today on Wednesday. Clayton Kershaw. Nice career, by the way.
Yeah, not he doesn't have to prove anything to me today. You know, we're going to go watch him. I know you saw him against the Mets last week briefly before the rain delay. Might have some rain here today on Wednesday. I hope Kershaw can throw more than two innings. But yeah, he doesn't. I don't need to see him. It's not like this is a legacy defining Wednesday afternoon start in the getaway day against Cleveland. But he's still here, and I think they're kind of need him to throw a lot of innings this season.
How many runs would Kershaw have to surrender today for you to not vote for him on your Hall of Fame ballot? 1,000?
I don't know. Right? Yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of cushion in terms of the career numbers, but no, I'm not going to think any less of him. But he is now in a role that I don't think we expected him to have to be in.
So remember, pitches last year. I believe he throws 30 innings, maybe
seven or eight starts,
and he's bad. Like the worst he's been. He had a couple. The numbers are obviously better than I remember. I'm sure it's like a 4-2. Instead of a
4-5.
Sure. He's a 4-5 in 30 innings. Like, whatever. Hurts his foot. Not on the playoff roster. They win the title. He lifts the trophy.
Yep.
It's awesome. It's great. Is this it for Clayton Kershaw? We do the thing that we do every year. You know,
well, not really though, because like this time at the parade, he's like I'll be back. He's like, I gotta get a bunch of surgeries, but if I can sure. throw the ball, I will pitch for the Dodgers
now. And because Clayton Kershaw has tenure with the Dodgers,
as he should,
it was like, Clayton, you get yourself right, you come back when you're ready to throw, we'll work in. Mm-hmm. Right, it's happened quicker than we thought.
Oh yeah,
he comes back in mid-May. Mm-hmm. And he shows up to a rotation that could use the minutes from a starting staff with Snell down, Glasnow down, Roki down. They're looking for starting pitcher innings. And it now goes from Clayton Kershaw, like farewell tour, where if like they wouldn't have let Charlie Morton do that, obviously.
Sure.
Not a fair comparison. But I'm saying like Clayton Kershaw, given what he is right now, was given more leash and more leeway to come back and give it more of a chance because of what he's accomplished, as he should, as it's deserved. That's what I'm saying. But now they're in a position where, like, they will take whatever they can get from Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah. And, you know, any version of Kershaw was going to be interesting this season, but I was wondering what it would look like, and maybe we will still have this question answered if Snell and Glasnow and Roki are coming back, and how they would have found ways to work him back in to have him on the roster over the course of a season. But right now it's like, no, he's one of our pitchers because he can throw a few innings every week, which is the standard at the moment. And that's the other part of just where the Dodgers are at is I reflect on what I was covering in spring training versus now. You know, one of the other things that has certainly helped cover up the all of those pitching injuries, I would say, is Yamamoto. I would say that is another big takeaway, getting to watch him in person for the first time, at least for me, since the World Series last year. This is, I mean, we're seeing it, right? Ooh. This is the pitcher who got this gigantic contract because everybody understood that he was already one of the best pitchers in the world in a way that I think probably a few too many people started to believe that Roki Sasaki was. Now, we'll save the Roki talk because, again, he's just not here right now. He's apparently going to start throwing again soon. It's unfair to him because he had accomplished so much less than Yamamoto, and because Sasaki was this strange situation where he was getting the minimum and everyone was in the mix. It made it feel like he was this more prized possession. But Yamamoto is really, and just talking to the people around the Dodgers at this point, he is at a level, and this was clear as soon as he got here, that last year was a good season, a really good season, through which he was adjusting the whole time. Yeah. Understanding that the ball is different, understanding that the routine is different, understanding that the expectations between starts are different for a pitcher in America versus in Japan, and the talent and the athleticism, which we saw on display with a defensive play that he made the other night, is all there. And what's extremely cool about that, too, especially when you compare him to some of the other best pitchers in the sport, some of the ones he's competing against, you know, for the Cy Young, whether it's a Skeens, whether it's a Wheeler, of course, guys like Scooble in the AL, is the physicality is just completely different.
So different.
He is.
Even compared to Strider, who's also short, right?
Sure.
He's a different type of athlete.
Yeah. And that, I remember, is what struck me when I saw Yamamoto for the first time in spring training a year ago. It's like, he's just not a big dude. Now he's, again, he's like, you know, he's lithe, he's athletic, he's not skinny, but it's a pretty average looking guy. And then you watch him operate and you watch him move on the mound and you can tell, like, oh my gosh, this is a special mover. And that is apparent in the fact that he has four or five plus pitches and plus command and, you know, everything.
Not a lot of baseball players have soccer athleticism.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
And especially pitchers.
Yeah.
I would say, like,
because we're so used to, especially now, we're so used to it being like the big hoss, right?
Skeens is
he's enormous. And that's impressive in a different way.
Sure. I'm like, you know, like a Christian Campbell, Mookie Betts have this almost like bouncy type of athleticism where they float when they run. And it reminds me of, like, you know, Aryan Robin with space on the wing, cuts inside, you know. And I think Yamamoto has that too as a pitcher, which is just, I mean, what a thing.
Yeah, he's really, really cooking right now. So his starts are very much like what the whole team looks forward to. It is the one day that, you know, Dave Roberts basically has admitted, like, I can just kind of chill, which is great. That's a good thing to have. But yeah, I would say those are the biggest ones. I guess we can talk about Otani a little bit more because he seems important. He's at 20 home runs. He is on a better home run pace than he's had ever in his career. He has never gotten to 20 home runs before June. So he's on pace for like 59 right now. Now, where that factors in when he's only on pace for like 31 steals. So he's kind of slacking in that regard. But what does that look like? Is he chasing 60 homers as he tries to come back? I don't know. The homers that he's hit so far in the series are a great example of the range, the spectrum of his power potential, which is essentially singular.
Gavin Williams starting Otani with a heater first pitch of the series.
Yeah.
It was so funny. We're in the press box.
Yep.
And you're like, man, if he throws him a heater, it's going to be gone.
Oh,
see ya.
No. 115. Quick work there.
That's the thing, watching ball with Jordan, like, you shouldn't be allowed, not that we do, you should not be allowed to sports gamble when watching baseball with Jordan, because, like, I feel like you know what's going to happen more than anyone else I know.
It's unbelievable. A lot of spoiler alerts. I'm just like, ooh, just keep an eye on this one.
Boing. last thing I want to say with the Dodgers is, I think we saw this more last night. Mm-hmm. The Dodgerness of it.
Sure.
Does sometimes get to players on other teams. Like, this just the weight and the intensity of those games, of like the expectation that this is a super team that pays its players a lot of money with a lot of veterans, that like, not that teams are afraid of them. I don't think that's what I'm saying. No baseball player would ever admit that. But teams are, certain teams, and I'm not saying this is Cleveland specifically, but there are like moments where you could see this where like you're playing behind from the jump.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
well, man, in this case, literally, because Ohtani homered 2 seconds into the game. But yes, no.
I saw this in Miami. Like when I went down to Miami, I know that Marlins took a game, all time game. But it was just like the game one of that series, it was like, there's no way the Dodgers are going to lose this game. And the Marlins knew it. And so it just kind of creates this very interesting dynamic. Very quickly on Cleveland.
Yeah.
Earlier, I made an analogy about recipe making.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Here's what Cleveland watching the Guardians feels like. You're on Chopped. You open your basket. Here we got Jose Ramirez. Wow.
Oh, it's like a ribeye. My goodness. Ooh, nice that's a good looking piece of meat. That's something that we don't get. Yeah. Like not everyone has the opportunity to, you know, cook that all the time.
And you look in the basket, you're like,
oh boy.
You look in there, you're like, there are a couple other things I could work with here. You're like, I don't think there's enough in this basket.
Yeah. And then about halfway through the round, I haven't watched Chopped in a while, they, you know, take away your knife. Like, what? Oh, geez, what am I supposed to do with this? Like, now you actually have to do it without this. Your oven can actually only be at this temperature. You are only allowed to boil water for this long.
Exactly.
And that is to say that while you have the starting superpower of Jose Ramirez, one of the greatest players of a generation, who currently has a career high, I think, 20 game hitting streak, and is, again, I just feel fortunate to now get to watch him and see what the rest of this career looks like, having jumped in here and on kind of the latter half, but him clearly still in his prime. They need a lot else to go right. And when you don't have, when you have more things going wrong that you were kind of counting on, it becomes very difficult to beat teams like the Dodgers when they are, have more of their top level players playing well.
The margin for error is just so much smaller.
Yeah. And again, they like, Bobby's good. Bobby's really good. Bobby's a really good pitcher. And you would see, you even saw flashes of it in that start. But as that pitch count builds up, you just, there's just moments there. And there's just too many things that, whether it is injury related, whether it is underperformance, right now, when you compare it to the team we were watching a year ago, which of course has some very different personnel, when we don't have an all-star and Josh Naylor in there, you don't have even Andrés Giménez, where offensively you didn't really work getting much. Like, he's the best defender in the sport. And so that was like a floor of production that you just had for sure that has now become this rotating door of players.
And it's not as if they're, like, when I watch certain teams, like the Marlins or the White Sox last year, look around the room, you're like, there are guys in this room who should not be everyday Major League Baseball players.
Right.
I don't necessarily get that sense in Cleveland. No. It's just like, if you, all of these guys would be good to have, like the second level, obviously not Jose.
Yeah.
The second level, it's like, this would be a good 17th guy to have on the roster.
Yeah.
Whereas then you look at the Dodgers, it's like, whoa, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's a good team right there.
It's like that middle bar of what you're kind of capable of getting on a regular basis is just a lot lower, unfortunately, for Cleveland.
Where does Max Muncy hit? Where does Andy Pages hit in the Guardians order?
Exactly. Right. And Pies, those guys are the second level guys. And right now, you know, Cleveland, you know, rotating through who is going to bat second. Okay, we got to try this. We got to try this. What are we getting at some of these positions where it's just haven't been able to find any sort of consistent production?
To the 28 other fan bases, thank you. We just wanted to dork out a little bit on something we both saw together, because that's rare for us. Let's take a break. And when we return, we'll make it up to you by reading your emails.
Let's do it. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbcast. Doing a podcast is a three-way street. I talk to you. You talk to me.
You email us.
And the listeners email us.
We have received so many great emails recently. And I think that, especially when we're in the same place, like, this is where we get to to dig into the silly questions that you find folks listen to. This is what Wednesdays are all about. And we have four emails that we are going to read today that made us smile, made us laugh, made us think. And not that, again, you can send an email to us for any reason, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. But those are oftentimes, the majority of your wonderful emails make us do at least one of those three things. Think, laugh, smile.
My favorite email actually that we've gotten recently was an email from Michael.
Yep.
And the subject just says JTHR with a GIF of Justin Turner smiling into the camera. We did Why Haven't You Homered Yet last week. And then Justin Turner said it was because of leadership. He was busy putting the energy into leadership. Then he homered. That's amazing. Let's get into this week's emails. The first one is from Grace. Hi, Jake and Jordan. Hi, Grace.
Hi, Grace.
Quick question for you. I saw a tweet of the uncovered bullpen phone box at Fenway. Maybe this is a stupid question, but I saw the keypad and for the first time was like, wait, there's got to be a bullpen phone number. For whatever reason, I guess I just assumed there was a big red button in there instead of an actual phone number keypad. Seems silly when I write it, but I never thought about it twice. Do you happen to know if there are one or more bullpen phone numbers? Who knows these numbers? Does the manager have to memorize it like we all did our childhood landline?
Yes.
I didn't see a cheat sheet pasted to the box. I wonder if people ever forget the bullpen number and have to quickly ask around. But maybe that cheat sheet was in the now ceremonial lid that Tanner is traveling with.
Which I believe that. Oh, have they been traveling with it? I know it's been a tough week for the Red Sox, so I'm not sure how much they've been celebrating.
That's so unfortunate. It was a great bit.
And then unfortunately, once again, the Red Sox failing to capitalize on momentum. Grace,
thanks
great
for
question.
Considering my random question.
Yeah.
Best Grace. Couple things here. Number one, we're going to get on the case.
Yeah, shame on us. I mean, Grace sent us an email a few days ago and we've been at the ballpark. We've contemplated it. We looked at it. And I think we should give a little bit.
I tried to open it yesterday.
Yeah, there you go. He tried to do journalism. So let's give a little bit more background. And I think you've probably noticed this in the photos of the Red Sox one. And just, I mean, if you've seen pictures of the dugout. So there's three phones in every dugout. And this is really where I think we need to ask some questions. There are three phones and they all look the same, or I believe they basically have the same official MLB cover on all three of them. There's bullpen, as Grace, that's the one people know, right?
Most famous one.
Most famously. There's replay, which has also become quite famous, which is call down to your video room. Yes. Are we reviewing? Are we reviewing? Yes, yes, yes. And then there's a third one that's press.
And that's us, and we don't know why the hell it exists.
Yeah. So I don't know. Again, maybe there's something more obvious that there's a reason that you would need to communicate between the dugout and the press box.
Here's how it goes. Stephen Vogt picks up the phone. He goes, Jordan, love that article.
Yeah, just in the middle of the sixth inning. Or like, yeah, no, it really doesn't make any sense. Official it's not story. Like they're coming. Because the only thing, you know, in the press box, it's like the main thing information they're trying to keep track of during the game is who's warming up. Right, but they have TV monitors for that, and they have binoculars. Oh, what substitutions have just happened in the eighth inning? Okay, you look. Oh, hey, so and so's in right field. What needs to be scoring changes? That doesn't have to be communicated during the game. I just don't know.
So here's what I'll say, Grace.
Yeah, I want to get back to Grace's question too.
Great question.
Because what do we think the answer is?
I also thought that the bullpen phone was just press one button, call bullpen. It rings. They
especially because, like, you don't have time
never
to.
Seen, well, and you've also never seen the manager turn to the pitcher coach, get this guy hot. Pitcher coach picks up the phone and is like punching into numbers.
I don't think so. Yeah, it's like it always feels like when they show it, they are picking up and immediately speaking. Yeah. So maybe it's just that, like, the people that install phones, it just comes with a keypad. Regardless of whether or not the functionality of it.
Can I call you on that phone?
That's the question. It's less about whether the bullpen phone has a number, although I think what Grace is really getting at is what you're asking is, oh, can I call Jordan from the bullpen phone? No. The real question is, can I call the bullpen from my phone right here?
So I believe, and this is what I wanted to say, I believe this happened in college. Okay. At some point in the last 5 years, there was like a prank where an opposing school's fans got the number, I want to say it was the Texas A&M phone, and like called the dugout and got the guy to warm up.
So this is another thing, though, because in college, it's a lot of walkie-talkies. How many Division I, again, in SEC, you got some nice, really nice stadiums, really nice facilities. But even those games, I feel like most of the time I am looking at the pitching coach or someone using a walkie-talkie. That's like pretty standard practice, which is, of course, a little bit harder to interfere with. But I could be wrong. And again, this has opened up a lot of questions that I think we need to dig into. And so we look forward to doing that a little bit more today for you, Grace. So thank you for that email.
My internet is freezing up on me here, but I did find an article from the McAllister News Capital, your news source in Southeast Oklahoma since 1896.
I was like, I don't know where this is going to be.
And it is an article with the headline, "What Really Happened in the Texas A&M Bullpen Prank Call Video."
Okay, so this is, what year is this?
This is 2017.
Okay, so again, I imagine that this is, maybe some things have changed about, you know, the way these phones operate even since then, in respective dugouts, because this is, especially now at high level college baseball, this is not a small matter, I imagine.
It seems real phone call, fake results. So they didn't actually request a pitcher.
Okay.
But they did they did find the number.
Okay. They successfully called the bullpen from not the dugout, is the question. Right.
Grace.
Can you achieve that?
Yeah. Grace, thank you for your service.
I doubt that is possible in the major leagues. I feel very strongly about that. And my guess is that those numbers are entirely
internal.
Oh, you're saying there's like different extensions, like you can call to different rooms in the stadium, but just not beyond that? Yeah, maybe. That is funny, though. Like, a home field advantage is, oh, you know, man, you go to Milwaukee and it takes forever it's like, oh, man, bullpen's got me on hold. I can't get my guy warm. There's a lot we could go. Okay, Grace, great question. Thank you for the email.
Next one's from Jackson. Skeens will pitch for Team USA. Hi, Jake and Jordan. I recently saw that Paul Skeens announced he'd be pitching for Team USA in the 2026 WBC. As a fan of Skeens and a fan of my country, I'm obviously excited for him to be on the team. It's got me thinking, what is the process for joining Team USA? Was Skeens invited and then accepted, or did he just announce it? Who would be the funniest example of someone announcing they're playing for Team USA? Like, yeah. If Ben Lively... email was sent before Ben Lively's Tommy John. Just announced that he would be pitching for Team USA, and then Team USA had to awkwardly tell him he probably wasn't going to make the cut. Obviously, you two are the only ones I know that gets what I'm asking and has the credentials to answer it. Thank you. This is exactly what I was looking for. So here's how the process goes. There's a lot of whispering behind the scenes, and players are super weird about this, because if you're a media person, you ask, like, I'm trying to think of an example. If I were to ask Mookie Betts, Mookie, you're going to do Team USA next year? Here's what Mookie would probably say before it was public. I'd love to do it again if I'm asked.
Yeah.
Right?
Even Mookie Betts.
Even Mookie Betts.
Say that. Yep.
I'd love to do it again if I'm asked, because they don't want to get in a situation where they're looking weird and bad about this. In terms of Skeens and Judge, who are the two players confirmed, I would imagine DeRosa, the manager, did a lot of kind of backroom phone call stuff to get those two guys invested and involved. Mm-hmm. And so by the time it was announced, like, it had just kind of been done for a while. I can say that I've talked to a couple of players who wanted to play for Team USA, thought they might get a phone call, got a phone call and did not play last time.
Yeah.
And so, like, then you're in the situation where they're not going to announce it, you know?
No, right. Of course not. I mean, I love, you know, the scenario Jackson is suggesting is very funny, and that is why we are talking about it. But it is an interesting question about the process, because, I mean, I've heard two of just, I mean, not necessarily with Team USA, but there is a level of you are kind of working it behind the scenes, because you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to come and be like, I'm playing, but you can make it clear and say, like, I will play. I want to play, But if only if you absolutely are going to let me play, like be a part of the team, and they're not going to go through the process to only find out that they're going to sit on the bench. And so the levels of interest there is definitely a range, because there are some players that are going to say, screw it. Like, I want to be on the team in any capacity. But there's also probably players at the highest levels that are going to say, I am not going to commit unless I know I'm starting at X position. And that's where, and this is kind of part of where international competition becomes so compelling. And this is true in all sports too. I mean, you see this in the Olympics with basketball, when you have all these incredible players, it's like, oh my God, this is, you know, the one of the best players on earth has played 2 minutes. Yeah. Well, that's because it's basketball and there's only five players on the court. But even in baseball, there's situations where it's just like, no, I'm not going to go interrupt my spring training to not play.
That's how you end up with like the ego stuff. Vargas being like on the team or whatever.
Right. Where you need to have a balance.
You want to have a guy on the team whose job is utility player.
Yeah.
Who's not going to play a lot. And that's why like Bobby Witt Jr. was on the 2023 team as a pinch runner. Like that was the job.
Yeah.
He knew that was the role.
And maybe
he was okay with doing that.
Right.
And maybe Bobby Witt Jr. would be okay with
maybe doing he's again. Still down to not be the shortstop, but feels like his expectation would be, I will be the shortstop now, and that's reasonable. Sure. So that's, I guess, our understanding of kind of how those conversations work. But I do think that process is something we've talked about this when we talked about Judge and Skeens. Clearly, this is now a process that is beginning a lot earlier than in years past. Literally. And that is a great sign for the state of the tournament. That is a great sign for just getting more participation. And I think we will now start to hear more about it the way that we do hear in, you know, USA basketball, the way that we do here and stuff like that.
I heard a story recently,
because a lot of politics involved in that stuff.
Literally, to be eligible for these rosters, you need to be eligible for citizenship for the country. You don't actually need to be a citizen of the country. We talked about this briefly with Italy.
Yes.
And like the change for citizenship. I heard a story. Okay. So for Team Israel, you just have to be Jewish.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. I heard a story about Team Israel reaching out to a player who's not Jewish.
They're just
with
like
a Jewish kind of like a Jewish name, a Jewish adjacent name.
I mean,
that's
again,
a tough one, right? Because it's like, what are you going to do? Ask around.
But like, again,
you got to do the work behind the scenes. Is this guy Jewish?
Yes, of course. But there are, I mean, the people involved with putting these teams together are doing this year round. You know, so maybe the players, of course, are not necessarily, it's not top of mind in the middle of their major league season, but there are years between these events for a reason. And part of that is that the recruiting process, especially for some of these teams where you don't have 200 big leaguers to choose from, right. You are going a lot of different directions to kind of fill out your roster.
Right. All right. Last one. This is from Owen. Owen says, Mets fans are wearing a rally cap in a tie game tonight. Feels like your team should have to be trailing to justify a rally cap. Is there a consensus protocol for when the rally cap
is warranted? So I think this was the Friday night, the Eternal game, which you were at against the Dodgers. The one I saw was, is he saying the Mets fans were wearing rally caps?
I think Mets fans were wearing rally caps, but I think I did see Pete Alonso.
Pete 100% was wearing it in extra innings, which is also something that you do not see in the major leagues very often. I can say that pretty confidently. That's college baseball.
Pete is the perfect
all the time. Yeah, but Pete is kind of the perfect one to say, yeah, screw it. I'll put my hat, you know, flip it upside down, put it inside out.
In a way, you should be more willing to do that in the big leagues because when you, first of all, for those who don't know, rally cap, obviously, you flip your hat inside out.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Kind of makes me sick as someone who wears hats and really, really bothers me to see hats ruined.
This is what I'm going to say. If you're in college and you ruin your hat, you're not getting another one.
Oh, that's Pete, also true. Yeah.
If he
that's
turns
true.
His hat inside
that's
out.
That's a great point.
Hey, let me get.
Yeah.
I need but, two more of those.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also just like the quality of the hats in college are generally lower, where they're much easier to just flip inside out or just like bend in whatever weird direction that you want.
Sure.
So, but to the question, I mean,
it's a no for me, dog. I think if you're down like 3-0 in a series and the game is tied, you can rally cap it. But I think in a regular season game, rally capping in a tie game.
Yeah, tie game. In this specific case that he's referring to, which I believe, there, I'm willing to give a little bit of wiggle room for, we need this game to end somehow.
Please. Yes.
Right? Like, it's not, I think Owen is asking the right question. And I do think, getting back to what you were saying, I do think it's better if you are needing to come from behind. You need some sort of special baseball juju to help you to come back in a way your win probability is really low. I think in Pete's case, it was just like, that's funny, right?
That's
the
amazing
win probability number confirms there's like a line where rally caps become appropriate. I think that's kind of fun. And low. I don't know where it was for the Mets at that point, but probably not that low because it was a tie game.
The way to think about it is like, the way to think about
the home team batting,
it's a break in case of emergency situation where you punch through the glass, you take, I guess, the hat on your head, you put it in the glass, you take it out, turn it inside out, you need a rally.
Yeah.
But you're not going to do a rally cap down 12-1.
No, because then you're really not.
Then it's a waste. Win probability is like under 20.
Oh, it can't be too low.
That's what I'm saying. It can't be too low. Like, it's a waste.
Don't waste this plea to the baseball gods. Correct. On a game that is very likely to result in a loss. Whereas if you're in kind of that you know, the Goldilocks zone, as our friend Eric Longenhagen would call it, where it's just like perfectly right there, where it's like, okay, we got a chance. It's not likely, but like, we are in this. Yeah. We have multiple runners on base. We have maybe the tying run is either up to bat or on deck, and it's a good, we're you know, only an out or zero outs. We feel like the rally is building. Because that's the other thing. Sometimes it kind of feels like a bit of a bandwagon move to the rally in progress. If you put the rally cap on before the inning even starts, that's kind of where it's best executed from the standpoint of like putting it on where you've already got bases loaded and the likelihood of you scoring is like, well, yeah, of course you're going to score now. It's not like you're going to take credit for the rally cap for that.
This is like a team puts up 12 runs in an inning. And they pan to LeBron in the crowd. He's got the rally cap on. I've been wearing this since the first inning.
Yeah, no. When we had zero runs, for sure. I've had this on. So, but it is a good point. I did notice it with Pete, and I'd be curious. I guess we can ask some players hit about when's the last time they wore a rally cap. Have they ever in a big league game? These were wonderful emails. Thank you all. Whew. For, I mean, again, we have so many more that we could get to, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, react to some of the stuff around the league last night, because while we were watching the Dodgers and Guardians, full slate, a lot of games, we're going to get to some of that when we return on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Let's go around the league. The movie A League of Their Own is good. There, however, is a scene in it that I hate, which is the no crying in baseball.
Yeah, if you've listened to this pod, you've heard Jake.
Pro tears.
Big into crying in baseball. More crying in baseball, I think, is kind of how Jake views it. If he could have his druthers, as they say.
I don't think I'm necessarily like pro crying in baseball. I think I'm just pro crying and do this for a living.
So this is your arena to where you can apply your pro tears propaganda. But to your point, the reference you're making, this is a longstanding understanding or sentiment that has been enforced. I do think we've made a lot of progress in over the years of pushing away from that notion, and that tears on field or in any context.
Not any context.
Okay, fine. But I mean just in a baseball context, whether it was in a post-game presser or pre-game presser or whatever, like on field tears, baseball tears, we're in.
I once sat down at dinner with my wife. She was not my wife at the time.
But it was the same person.
Same person. It's very funny. And the light hit her face in a certain way, and I just started crying.
Oh, my God.
Like, I'm
this would be so sweet if she was ever listening to this.
She will never. She's not listening, bro.
Man.
But like, I cry all the time.
I wish I had an adorable anecdote like that for my wife to overhear in the other room.
Yeah,
but alas.
No, but she makes fun of me for it.
Oh, okay. I love
makes fun
that.
Of me for it all the time in love a way that. That like Crying is good.
Yeah, what a sucker.
That was probably an, I would probably not have cried in that circumstance. But this is all to say there were some tears on the ball field last night.
Yeah.
A player you almost certainly don't know, named Ronnie Simon, a Dominican infielder for the Miami Marlins, made three whoopsie daisies.
Yeah.
In a game, was they all in the same inning? I believe
two of them were in the same inning, and it basically contributed heavily to the Padres coming back from many runs down, and the Marlins lost to the Padres. And Ronnie Simon
out of the game,
yeah. So Ronnie Simon was very emotional. I mean, he's a rookie; he's playing in what is 20th or 25th major league game, and he was again. Tears, crying, and he basically ran off and then was replaced in the game because clearly Clayton McCullough was like, he's not in a position to be playing for us right now. Not as like a punishment, but you can understand that was a reaction. So I'll be honest, I haven't seen what Clayton McCullough said about this after the game, so sorry. But again, because we often talk about crying in baseball, this felt like a topic we should at least hit on.
I feel like the response to this was good. These are human beings,
yeah,
and it's an overwhelming thing sometimes to be in the arena,
mm-hmm.
and that's not necessarily something that's innate. You have to, players learn that.
Yep.
And I think that when you make those errors, you feel really lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is staring at you, and he feels the weight on his back of creating the loss,
yeah.
which he did do. I mean, like, yeah. they lost this game because of him.
Yep.
But on the scale of things that matter, the Miami Marlins, the 2025 Miami Marlins dropping a Tuesday night game to the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
Not that big of a deal. Yet, to the players, it sometimes is, and to a player like Ronnie Simon, who maybe never thought that for a little bit he was maybe not going to be a big leaguer.
Yeah.
And like,
it's an interesting...
this is his opportunity to perform for this bad team.
Sure.
There's a chance that like Ronnie Simon is not on the 2026 Miami Marlins. There's
yeah.
a chance that this is the window. And last night was really tough to watch. And
yep.
so, look, if I, the best case scenario here is like Ronnie Simon turns into a perennial all-star. We could be like, remember the time he cried? That was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. And that level of, you know, what are the windows where you understand the level to which players care? There's different ways that you can see that.
Sure.
And Ronnie Simon is an interesting example of someone who is never a top prospect, but someone that has had success in at other levels of baseball. He was the MVP of the Dominican Winter League 2 years ago.
Let me just say something. Whatever stress he was under to perform in the Dominican Winter League,
exactly. This is why I wanted
significantly higher.
That's
than
the
stress he is feeling playing for this Marlins.
That's
team.
What I wanted to bring up. Is it's yeah. like and in those situations, and we've talked to players about this and understand that there are a lot of Dominican players who are right. Those games that they're playing at home in front of their home crowd for their hometown, in a lot of cases, those games feel the weight of those. And Ronnie Simon's played down there in those environments, and this is a different thing, and thrived, right? And so in this case, this is a situation where, right, he's on the road, it's packed San Diego, and while we understand that the expectations for the 2025 Marlins in any situation are going to be low, and it's just like, you guys are major leaguers, he still feels the responsibility, as you're saying too, the opportunity
yeah.
that is small and rare, and I think that was what was very clear there. So, you know, Ronnie Simon has, again, he's played for a long time. It's not like he's like 19, like he's been around, he's sure. accomplished some stuff. And so I hope that right now we can, as you said, we can just hope that he does have a long career ahead of him.
I feel pretty confident that Gabe Kapler, the Miami Marlins, whatever he is over there, will be talking to Ronnie Simon today and throwing an arm around Ronnie Simon. Like yeah. that is guaranteed.
Yeah. So that was a moment we wanted to talk
three
about.
Three other things from last night. Christian Yelich, whose name I continue to spell incorrectly somehow, throwing an extra L in there for the last 12 years. He needs to win another MVP for me to spell it right.
Yeah.
First career grand salami.
Yes. So this is just like a week after Rafael Devers hits his first career grand slam. And it just feels statistically improbable when you
first
have.
Walk off.
I'm sorry. First career walk-off home run.
For both.
For both. Yes. I'm sorry. I don't know if... Sorry, we're a little tired. I don't know if you did say first career walk-off or first career Grand Slam, but this was cool because it was a walk-off Grand Slam. So that makes it all the cooler. But
walk-off Grand Slams are great because it sounds like a 6-year-old saying. I love a walk-off Grand Slam. Of course you do, buddy. Those don't happen.
Yeah, right. And so Rafael Devers, a week ago, hit his first career walk-off home run, and he had over 200 career home runs. Same thing with Yelich. And I tweeted at the time, I said, okay, Christian Yelich is now the active leader, most home runs without a walk-off homer. Now, you know who the leader is?
Shohei Ohtani.
Juan Soto. Juan Soto does not have a walk-off home run. Now, he's got some pretty cool...
And he never will.
He's got some pretty cool home runs that felt like walk-off home runs or felt like, you know, have that moment. But yeah.
I should ask him about this. If that's like a moment.
You know what's funny? You know who's number two? Corey Seager. Another one where it's like, what do you mean? He's had so many big home. It's like, no, actually not. These were oftentimes the biggest ones were in the top of the inning or earlier in the game. So anyway, so those are the two. I need to look into who the other ones are on that list now, but to see Yelich do that. And then on the flip side, Red Sox, we're struggling. We're dealing with some stuff there.
Pure mid.
Yeah, I mean,
our
pure
friendly in fantasy would say.
Well, right now, mid would feel great, but it has felt a lot worse than that recently. And I don't know, man. I am officially wavering on the Red Sox postseason. Wavering? No, I'm not giving up, but I'm not feeling awesome about their situation.
The bottom of their roster is also wavering.
Okay. Yes.
There you go.
Roman Anthony.
Where are you? You're in Worcester.
Roman Anthony. Harper, yeah.
Last night, doinked by Spencer Strider on
the
elbow.
That's one way to put it.
95 inside. Strider not trying to hit Bryce Harper. Strider, who is a cartoon villain now in Philly. Both fair and unfair in different ways. Obviously, Strider not trying to hit him. I thought what Strider said after the game was great. I don't know if you saw those quotes. He was like, I thought he was wearing an elbow guard and didn't realize like what was going on and how, you know, Bryce Harper is one of the best players of the century. Baseball is better when he's on the mound. Obviously, I'm not trying to do that. Bryce Harper gets hit a lot relatively because guys are trying to pitch inside on him. Because if you throw a fastball over the plate and he gets his arms extended, I think we've all seen that before.
Yeah, bad news.
Bad news. Bad news bears. So thankfully, the x-rays were negative in that they were positive in that they were. He's got.
Seems like he's okay.
He seems okay. Contusion. We'll see how that happens. And then one other quick thing from last night. Brady Singer, who spent a long time with the Kansas City Royals, traded to the Reds over the offseason, goes into Kansas City last night with a delightful revenge game. We love a revenge game against the old club. Better when you're a pitcher and you shut the old club down because you're out there all night and you're facing like all of your old teammates. Whereas if you're a hitter, you get 4 at-bats. You're like the reliever you see in the 7th wasn't on the team last year.
Yeah.
Whereas now, this was perfect.
Jonathan India, who he was traded for, did have 2 hits and a run batted in, but that is not enough as the Royals offense continues to not be good. And now, do you want to make the same "where are you" joke about Jack Caglione? Because the answer is Omaha.
There's a difference there.
Yes and no. It's still the same thing. We're just like, he's probably one of our best hitters right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, but yeah, it was a busy night. We had the Pirates coming back, which is very impressive because they haven't done that a lot. D-backs, also a team I'm starting to think, ooh, maybe you're not so awesome.
One more thing on last night, and this is one dumb question from your friend Jake Mintz.
Just one.
This is my first dumb question.
I feel pretty good that this won't be your last dumb question of the day, but maybe the last dumb question of the podcast. Continue.
Squirrel on the field last night, Detroit. You get this every once in a while, you know, a little critter skittering around, runs in the field.
Yep.
Broadcast sees it.
I didn't see this at all. So Panetti, tell me, describe it. Describe it. Do you okay? Squirrel in the field in Detroit. All right.
Runs
against
the
Giants. Yep.
Goes in the bullpen. Hijinks ensue. Great quote after the game. Will Vest. This is from Jason Beck at MLB.com. Quote on Tommy Canley. Tommy didn't have a lot of friends growing up, so he talked to squirrels. All-time burn. Towards Tommy Gainley. Who I feel like probably did have a lot of friends growing up.
What's your question?
How big does an animal need to be to stop the game? Because the squirrel did not stop the game. An elephant would stop the game.
For sure.
Bees have stopped the game.
I like an elephant is a funny one because... You know,
look, there's an elephant on the field. It's in the room.
Right. Whereas a squirrel can get on the field and probably be on the field for at least a few seconds before somebody notices.
Sure.
The elephant, that would be pretty hard for it to get. I don't know what stadium would be able to enable the elephant to get on the field. Okay. So wait. So the question is,
how big does the animal need to be for the game to be stopped? Because you're not stopping a game. You're not pausing a game.
So they didn't stop it for
for the squirrel? No.
They stopped it for a cat in Colorado.
That's the thing.
I don't know. That's an interesting one. I mean, that's technically the answer. Is there something in between squirrel and cat?
Was there a rarityness of the animal? Like if there was a chipmunk?
Right. Or and there's also probably the average level, care factor of whether this is fair or not to squirrels. Squirrels on the field, you're just like, whatever, it's a squirrel. When the cat, commonplace, and also it's like, I don't care. I don't care about the well-being of the squirrel. Whereas when the cat's on the field, there's more people being like, oh, we need to help that
thing. No one's eyeing the squirrel.
Probably not. Probably not. So then maybe it is there is a cute component. So that's another interesting thing.
Hamster on the field?
Right. Is there something else where it's
can
like-
this animal be a pet?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. So I think it's probably has more to do with that than the physical size. Sure. But I think it's a fair question.
Have we ever had a rat on the field in New York?
I feel like we have to have. How would we have not? Yeah. Probably a little more likely in the Bronx.
Whoa.
No, I'm just saying. I'm thinking about
that. That is correct because no one lives around.
Right. I mean, I'm sure there are some rats in the enormous City Field parking lots, but probably less so than, it's a bit of a farther walk from the train where I was certainly used to seeing the rats most frequently. Yeah. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, again, I have been in New York in a while, so you could tell me better.
Anyway, armadillo, porcupine, chinchilla. Chinchilla?
Right.
Chinchilla
I did. Yeah, my family had a chinchilla. Right. They're really cute. They're really cute, but that's also small enough to where you might not notice.
Yep.
So, here's another category of this is geese. Okay, so there are certain birds size-wise it probably does become dangerous and or we should probably pause, but
pterodactyl.
Yeah, for sure. We got to take a break.
One last thing before we get out of here. Last night Jordan Schusterman Texas Rangers game. The Rangers AJ and Big Justice out to bring the boom. If you don't know what we're saying, thanks for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. TJ Brassel, thank you for producing. Great, whatever. I would imagine the arrival of AJ and Big Justice prompted this tweet from Kennedy Landry about how
Kennedy pod listener, she must have been all over this.
All over.
I didn't see any of this, but I am confident that Kennedy covered this better than most could.
The people were Emily Jones.
Yep.
Decided to teach Bruce Brochu some Gen Z slang, including words
boy,
bussin', riz, and cap. She joked he should use one in the postgame presser of the Rangers won. Bochy on Jacob Latz after 3 shutout innings later. Quote: he was. He was bussing, wasn't he?
Bochy said that. That's great that Bochy's in that stage now. He's like, yeah, screw it. I'm like, I don't know how good we are. Who cares? I got nothing to prove. I might as well start peppering in some stuff. How often does Bruce Bochy get to say something new in a postgame? I have to imagine that's kind of where he is. Yeah, think about how many games.
After the game, we're bussing down to...
Yeah, that's probably what he thought it meant, and now he knows something else.
Yeah, we're getting on the bus. Someone responded to Kennedy, team has a losing record, but hey, Bochy said Riz. This is our team media, everyone, effing terrible. Kennedy, who rules. We talk to Bruce Bochy twice a day, every day, 200 times a year. Sometimes there are jokes. It is okay. Correct answer.
Bingo. Now, anyway, she's ahead of me on that.
When I told you the story, Bochy said Riz. I was like, you said was the Rizzler there?
I did.
It was just AJ and Big Justice.
Yeah. Aren't they sort of, not totally a package deal. I know the Rizzler kind of does his own thing.
You know, they're related, right?
No, they're not related. They're not related.
What do you mean they're not related?
They're not. No, they're like a, they're both. See, now I'm teaching Jake. They're not related.
They're not related?
No, they're like two families that realized that they their memes were killing it on TikTok, and they're like, "We, what if we combine our powers?" That's my understanding of what happened.
I thought they were cousins.
I don't think so. No. So maybe I'm wrong.
All right.
But wait, what?
That's it.
Oh, you just wanted to tell me
that they were related.
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure. Actually, we should fact check this now because this is good content anyway. This is an easy Google because I'm sure I'm not the only person to Google this. Are this Big is the most AJ.
Googled, this is the most Googled thing of 2025.
Big Justice.
Justice.
I bet it'll autofill. And the Rizzler related. There it is.
Here we go.
Da, 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 da. No, they're just friends.
I don't know, man. You gotta.
Jake's like, you are related. They're sorry.
They're related in my mind, apparently.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not related. They do look, yeah, they look like they could be cousins. I agree. But that's, anyway, okay, I think we're done talking about this. But Kennedy, who's been on the show before, I'm sure she has thoughts about this. And I know that, especially AJ and Big J, they've been doing, they're all over the place. They don't.
You see the home run derby, AJ against Bryce Harper?
I will
Big
say.
Big Justice against Bryce Harper?
I did see that, yes.
That's good
content. I will say that, like, Rangers win this game 2-0. Eovaldi leaves early. I could see Rangers going a little heater, and it's like, it's because Bochy said bussin'. So, and if and when that happens,
yeah.
Sorry, Brett Boone, no credit to you, all about bussin' and Riz, whatever. But I hope Kennedy goes back and tells whoever is tweeting at her, and I hope she says, I hope she puts them in their place. I'm actually rooting for the Rangers to go on like a W-10.
If you say the word Riz to anyone in baseball, what do they think of?
What do they think of?
Mike Rizzo.
Yeah, well, right.
GM, that's or
true.
Anthony Rizzo.
That's true. I think more Mike Rizzo. I think that's, he is more Riz. Yeah.
You got the Riz?
We're
done. You know who doesn't have the Riz? Every MLB team as Anthony Rizzo.
No. They don't.
They don't.
Mike Rizzo.
Great career.
Should sign.
Anthony Rizzo. They're related.
We're done. Thank you all for listening.
Boo!
We will be back in these chairs later this week. Tomorrow, actually. We're going to record on Thursday night, but you will hear it on Friday. Thank you to TJ Brassel for producing. Thank you to Brett Rader, the real head of podcast here.
Real
Yahoo,
head? Come on.
Who,
no.
The, well, not to just, you know.
The big head.
He's above us all here. He helped make sure that we could do this.
El Papa Grande.
This is something that we again, have been wanting to do, is record a podcast in the same room. Now we got to do it. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it, if you're listening or watching. But we will be back later this week. We are going to go watch Clayton Kershaw against TBD.
And
hopefully it doesn't rain. But thank you all for listening.
Get a good crying today. It's cool.
Yeah. Do it for Ronnie. Goodbye.
Maybe your wife will make fun of you.